Want entertainment designed just for you? Then check out customizable streaming TV from Xfinity. It makes your life simple, easy, awesome.
Xfinity gives you customizable streaming TV options. Enjoy the most free shows anywhere on any device, and even access your streaming apps right on your TV with X1. Go to Xfinity.com, call 1-800-XFINITY, or visit a store today to learn more. Restrictions apply.
Warning. This show contains adult political themes and language. Liberals and little children should cover their ears.
Welcome to Liberty Never Sleeps, where negativity never sounded so good. Now here's your host, Thomas Purcell.
Good morning and welcome to Liberty Never Sleeps. Make sure to follow the show at our website at libertyneversleeps.com. Be sure to follow our Twitter feed at Real Liberty Tom, and you can also join us on Facebook at Real Liberty Never Sleeps on Facebook.com. Okay, a couple quick updates before we begin the show. If you're hearing an echo, it's because I'm broadcasting from essentially an empty room. Yesterday, the painters were in here and pulled all the bookcases off the walls, patched them up, and did 99% of the painting. They've got to come back and touch up, do the top, but there's nothing in the room except my broadcasting desk, which they set all back up. You know, it's going to be a long process because they've got to first do all the painting. Then once it's all done, because I had the internet come in, the guy came in yesterday, put all the wiring and panels in, then the painting gets done, and then sometime in the next few months, because I'm not going to be doing any work on this room during the holiday season, from Thanksgiving to Christmas, I don't want the house torn up. Then in the spring, they put all new flooring in, which is we're doing is wood flooring instead of carpet, and there's a lot of reasons for it. Then after the spring gets done, then the shelving, bookcases, and what you're going to see as we do this new broadcasting center is going to be multiple monitors, and then behind me will be like what you see in other shows, like bookcases with the books that I've written on display, that sort of thing. So it's going to look nice. I mean, I've seen pictures of how it's going to be done and what's going to be. It's just going to be a long process because I don't have, you know, if I had like $10,000 or $20,000, I could do this studio, you know, overnight and just have the whole crew come in a few days. But as you have to spread it out, because I'm just a mom and pop guy doing a micro blogging show or a micro podcasting, as they say. You do it as the money comes in and that kind of thing. And that comes out of our own pocket. We've been saving for years to do this. So it gives you an opportunity to see our show develop over the years. Now, for those of you who've been following the show, we've been doing it for about 2 years. And then there was a half a year where I did a joint show with Tom Laskowski, which has now been completely, defunct. It no longer exists. It's a different show now than it was in the very beginning. I still have some things up for you. But the show that you're donating money to, the 100% of the money that you donate to the show goes toward the show to pay the server costs, to pay advertising, and mostly it's advertising. Because as you well know, Google Analytics and whatnot, if you don't spend money, you ain't going to get ranked on the show. So that's where it all goes. Anyway, we got to move on. Another reason why you should donate a couple bucks to the show. If you donate $10 or more, you get access to the Friday private shows. I hate doing these sales pitches, but it needs to be done. But I do value those $2 donations because without them, we would not have the money to do this show. We would not have advertising budget. I mean, we have a very limited budget, as you can imagine. But it does get spent well. When we do these promotions, we get a lot of Facebook likes, we get a lot of Twitter feed, that kind of thing. And I also want to say thank you to Richard Barris of People's Pundit, who is putting us on PPV TV and PPV Radio, and has been an enormous help to our show as far as he knows how to get it out there, and he's been an enormous help. And if you want to listen to or read a great publication, go to People's Pundit Daily, and they will. I mean, they have a great show, a news broadcasting and a new online newspaper, and you should read it. It really is good. Anyway, we've got to move on. Sorry it took so long. Stormy Daniels. Today we're going to talk about socialism, and we're going to talk about a number of things, but I got to mention Stormy Daniels first because she lost her lawsuit against Donald Trump for defamation of character, and that's really important. As you can imagine, when you sign an agreement with someone that says, okay, I'm going to give you money if you don't talk about this issue, and you accept it and you sign it, and you take that money, and they say to you, now listen, if you break this agreement, you're going to have a penalty, because that's how all of these agreements are. You get a lump sum of money, you get a non-disclosure agreement, and then if you break that non-disclosure, not only do you have to give back the money, you get a fine. And in this particular case, the contract drawn up between Stormy Daniels and Trump's lawyer was a $1 million penalty. In other words, it's so onerous, you would never break it, except Stormy Daniels did. That's what the court ruled yesterday, that her defamation of character lawsuit can't go forward. It's done. And you have to not only make restitution for Trump's legal fees, but you have to pay in the $1 million as stipulated in the contract. Now, this is a big thing. Now, I'm sure it's going to be appealed because what do you do? Do you give Trump the $1 million and walk away from it? Or not? Or do you pursue it and potentially put yourself in more legal jeopardy with additional legal fees and whatnot? She shouldn't have broken the non-disclosure agreement anyway. And I don't know who talked her into it. Probably someone on the left. I know Michael Avenatti has certainly made himself famous. And that's the story here. The story here is not that Stormy Daniels lost. Because that was, I mean, if you can imagine Donald Trump's lawyers, you know, you can bet that this contract was ironclad, right? And somebody had to convince Ms. Daniels to do this lawsuit. Now, this is typical of the left wing. They get somebody like Stormy to say to her, hey, listen, you do this and we'll give you our backing. We'll protect you. We'll give you bonuses. You'll make a ton of money selling book rights and telling your story. You know, you're going to get money from a GoFundMe account because that's what always happens with these situations. It's what happened with Dr. Ford. It's what happened with other ones. And then don't worry about it. We'll take care of everything. And they give you the lawyer and they introduce you to certain people and certain protections, right? And then it goes forward and you lose. And you lose publicly. Like Dr. Ford did, like so many of these other women. And then all of a sudden, they're not interested in helping you anymore. You want to talk about a war on women? Let's talk about the Democrat war on women. I mean, Ted Kennedy alone, by himself, is a one-man war on women, right? Or I know he's passed away now, but he's a prime example of how the Democrats typically use women to get things, telling them all kinds of things. Oh, you'll get a little money. And maybe they do. You know, maybe they get that GoFundMe money. Maybe they write that book. Maybe they sell that contract. But in the end, they're destroyed publicly for what they did because the American people, by and large, recognize what happened. Now, Michael Avenatti will probably go on to fame and wealth. He'll probably go and get a show or be interviewed all the time. He's on TV all the time. CNN always gives him time, you know. And he'll come out way ahead of Stormy Daniels. So will all of the people that were involved with the Dr. Ford things. For instance, Dianne Feinstein. Dianne Feinstein was at risk of losing her seat. Not anymore. She's going to be the rallying cry of the Me Too movement. Brett Kavanaugh is a sexual assaulter, and you need to elect me and that sort of thing. And the Democrat Party probably promised Feinstein, we'll give, don't worry, you won't lose your seat. We'll take care of you. You take care of us. You've got this letter, blah, blah, blah. And you out Dr. Ford because she did not want to testify. That was in her letter. And so Dr. Ford is ruined. Stormy Daniels is ruined. She'll end up back on the poll. Bankrupt, destitute, run out of time. You know, this is what they do to women. And they do it for their own aggrandizement. Feinstein comes out well. Avenatti comes out well. In the case of Gloria Allred, she always does well. But where are the women that she would bring forward with these sexual harassment suits? They're left by the wayside. That's the war on women, folks. The war on women comes from the left, not the right. For instance, Sidney Weinstein, the producer that started this whole friggin' scandal, which morphed into the Me Too movement, he was a Democrat. He was a fundraiser for Hillary Clinton. He used to hang out with celebrities and donate money. I can't think of a single celebrity that didn't have a woman who hasn't taken a picture with, you know, Harvey Weinstein, right? So what does this tell you? It's from the left. It always is from the left. What was that senator's name who was going to Edwards? Edward, one man war on women, right? He had an affair with a woman, had children outside the marriage. Meanwhile, all the reporters who would travel with him every day as he ran for president and other things, right? Said that, why, we didn't know that was going on. How could you not? How could you not know of a mistress? How could you not know that he was having a child outside of marriage and leaving people by the, as I said, by the wayside? Remember the guy, what's his name, Gary Hart on the SS Monkey business with what's-her-face on his lap? I mean, it's a one-party war on women. That's the real war on women, the fact that the Democrat Party is using them for power, money, votes, whatever benefits them. And when they get what they want, down, out the window. It's classic. You know, you can use a woman. Use women or abuse women, I should say, rather than use women. It's the same thing in some cases. You can use them in ways other than sex. You can use them for power. You can use them for money. And that is a classic example of the war on women. That's the real war. It's not about one woman who gets hit by a man, right? And the man goes to jail. That's the image that you think of the war on women or guys like Weinstein, which were abusing women and using them for sexual toys and exchanging it for, you know, basically business or money or whatever. That's small potatoes. The real war on women is the massive amounts of corruption and abuse systemic within the Democratic Party. And that's the real problem. It's not the guy in the wife beater hitting his wife. Oh, that's terrible. And those people need to be jailed and whatever happened to them. You know, we all hear the stories about the football player that beats the girl and that kind of thing. And those people will be run out of the football or run out of their business, whatever. And that's deserved. But I'm talking about a much bigger problem. The political use of women. The use of women as a tool to destroy other people. The use of women as a weapon. They've weaponized, politically weaponized, the Me Too movement. And that's the real crime. That's the real war on women that you need to know about and recognize. Because we've got an election coming this fall. And if you elect somebody with a D in front of their name, who's a Democrat, if you elect a Democrat, you are perpetuating the war on women. Make no mistake about it. So if, you know, this is Hillary Clinton herself was out the other day talking about women and talking about, well, we can't access or get that Republican women vote because they're being manipulated by men. Are you kidding me, Hillary? You talk about women manipulated by men. The last two examples are classic examples, Stormy Daniels and Dr. Ford. That's the real manipulation. That's the real shame of it. That's the real horror. That's a systemic problem. And that's a real problem when you have it as a systemic problem. When you don't, you know, the guy who beats that's been going on since, you know, caveman days. And our justice system is the best in the world. It's not always perfect, but it gets to those people. But that's going to happen, and we do have laws and do it. The real problem is the way that the Democrats have weaponized it. That's the real sin. And in fact, in the case of Ted Kennedy, he has the first confirmed kill in the war on women. We've got to move on. I want to talk about socialism today. That's a real war on people, war on citizens, war on freedoms, war on anything that you can think of that's a party to the American way. Let's take a break, and we're going to talk about it a little bit. We'll be right back. Yeah. Gifts of all sizes help to ensure that Liberty Never Sleeps remains a relevant, vital resource across our nation. More than 70% of the funding for Liberty Never Sleeps comes from our listeners through the generosity of membership support by donating at Patreon.com. Join our Insiders Club for $10 a month and gain access to private shows and editorial columns. Go to LibertyNeverSleeps.com and click on the Donate Now button at the top of the page or on the button at our Facebook site. Thank you for your continued support.
Still my tongue tied, young pride would not let my love for you show.
Moving on. You know, I've done shows on the war on women. I think it's atrocious what goes on in the casting room couch, so to speak. To tell a woman, you get a job if you sleep with me. That's about the lowest thing that you can do, right? And it's just morphed into something more terrible. A systemic problem of using women for other than sex. For using them for power, money, and destroying them in the process. And I'm really offended by it. Because, as I said, I've done many shows on situations where women have been abused. I've been a big supporter of it. I've been in contact with a number of celebrities on the war on women, and I'm trying to do what I can do. But I got to tell you, the real war on women is coming from the Democrat Party, and it's coming in the form of political manipulation. And that's a even more atrocious crime. And the reason I talk about it so lengthy, and the reason I'm bringing it up today when we talk about socialism and communism, is it's the same thing. Using people to gain power for oneself, or money for oneself, or aggrandizement, shall we say. I'll use that as a lump sum category. And before we get into that, you have to understand what's the difference between socialism and communism, right? Because everyone uses those terms interchangeably, and it's not really the same thing, okay? Socialism, and let's define it once and for all. Socialism is when government takes wealth from one person and gives it to another for social reasons. In other words, you don't have enough money, you have a lot of money, we're going to take it in the form of laws or systems and give it to this other person to help them out. That's socialism. Okay? And there are a variety of ways that America has gradually shifted into a more socialist nation. It's still a capitalist nation, by and large. But there are elements of socialism in America. As I said, it's redistribution of wealth. And there are various programs that we have. There are food stamps. There are telephones. Like, they call them Obamaphones, but it really began under the Bush administration. And the Bush, that's one of the reasons why I was never really liked Bush. He was a big government type too. Rockefeller Republican. They call them rhinos now, but I grew up with Rockefeller Republican. They're liberal Republicans, okay? They believe in bigger government for other things. For instance, telephones. The argument being that, well, if you're poor, you don't have a cellular phone or a telephone, and so therefore it makes it more difficult for you to get a job. That's nonsense. You know, in my day, when I was a kid, you know, you got a job, you went out with a handful of resumes, literally. And you walked around. And you would go to, typically, when I was a kid, it was you go to malls and whatnot. In my case, I actually walked into a community farm. Bunny Love Carrots. I don't remember their names. They were really nice people. I walked into their office and I said, hey, listen, you hiring? Because I was open to getting a job. I mean, my first job was delivering milk off the back of a truck. My mom got me the job. She was friends with this guy who she'd done business with. And he was a delivery for Knudsen Farms. If you're familiar, if you're in California, Knudsen. I don't know if they're still around. I should look them up. They were a milk service. You know, they offered milk, dairy products, and whatnot. And he had a delivery route. He would go to different businesses like supermarkets, gas stations, KOA campgrounds, and deliver milk to their, you know, mini marts. And he needed help. And I was, I think, 15 at the time. It wasn't legal for him to even hire me, but I wanted to work. And my parents felt it was a good idea for me to work, and I got extra money for it, you know? And I delivered milk off the back of the truck. I really loved that job. It was such a – I love manual labor. I've always done that. It would strike you as odd, right? And I delivered milk off this back of the truck. Well, that was, you know, the first taste of capitalism that I got. And it gave me a lot of freedom. It allowed me to buy things like things for my car eventually and whatnot. I had spending money in my pocket. But socialism is taking money from one person and giving it to another. Sorry, I went off on that tangent about what my first job was. You didn't need a phone to get a job. We have other forms of socialism too. We have Section 8 housing. The government says, oh, you can't afford to buy a home. Here's a voucher. We'll pay your rent or portion of your rent. And therefore, you now have, you're no home, you're not homeless anymore. You have a place to live. So we give you a place to live. We give you a phone. We give you something to eat. If you got a low paying job and you're just starting out, we'll give you some food stamps. So we have elements of socialism, but socialism is voluntary. Socialism is where the people say they want these things, okay? And that's the difference between communism. Communism is a little different. Communism, it's enforced by strong central leadership. It's also government planning. Government is going to say, we're going to distribute the wealth and we're going to do it to everyone. Socialism is voluntary in the sense that wealthier people are taken from a little bit more and you have a vote in a democratic state. Mass democracy or a republic. It's like kind of like communism light or diet communism, right? It's been famously said that people move toward communism by bringing in socialism first because it makes it palatable. If you're getting phones, if you're getting subsidies with housing, taxes, whatever, all kinds of benefits. If you're getting that and the government says, well, now we're going to enforce it on a mass scale, and everybody is going to get housing. Everybody is going to get phones. Everybody is going to get food and whatnot. You think, oh, it's all right. We already got it anyway. Well, why should poor people benefit from the state? We'll have everybody benefit from the state. And everybody will have housing. And everybody will have medical care and whatnot. And the argument against it is always, it's going to cost too much. Well, in a communist state, see, this is why where Ocasio-Cortez is positioning people like her, too. And the Democrat Party, we'll get to that in the end of the show. That's how they position you. Because what happens is this. They say, well, let's give phones. Let's give Section 8 housing. Let's give free medical care. And even the people who are doing it don't know that they're doing it. That we'll give you all these things. But it's going to cost. The argument is always, oh, it's going to cost money. What are they saying about Ocasio-Cortez's plan? Well, it's going to cost $40 trillion, right? And she has no way of knowing. She says, why? She doesn't give you any answers on how to pay for it. But you're being positioned, and here's how. When those things come in place, as you vote in socialism and as you vote in socialists, and you begin to get that program and the debt starts to pile up, which is where we're at now. We're at $21 trillion and it's growing. As that debt goes, they begin to say, you know what? The problem is the debt in the sense that if government controlled everything, we wouldn't have to pay. In other words, let's say you've got a $21 trillion debt because you're paying for Obamacare, if you're paying for phones, housing, food stamps, that kind of thing. Well, you know what would be easier and would be more cost efficient is if we just seize those industries, right? And we just give it to you for free. And there's no debt because it's all government. It's all funded by the wealthy people. We collect these taxes. And you know what? Wealthy people, we're just going to control everything. Your business, we're going to seize it. That way we don't have to pay back the debt. Because if we own Microsoft, if we own Google, if we own this and we own that, we don't have to collect taxes. We own it. The money comes in directly to the government. And then we pay off the debt. That's how you get positioned into communism. They run the state into deep debt. They make people suffer and have an economic collapse. Then when there's the economic collapse or wars or something like that, then the people are willing to listen to what you say. And, you know, I posted a clip from Dr. Zhivago, and it was a direct quotes from Boris Pasternak's Zhivago, which explains how it works. In the case of communism, communism was around long before it actually took hold in Russia. There were various forms of it, Bolshevism and whatnot, Marxism, Leninism, all these different concepts, but the people weren't ready for it. the people didn't want it. They were rejected. World War One happened, and the Bolsheviks knew it, knew what would happen. And so they encouraged Bolsheviks to join the army and get familiar and become friendly with people and, you know, talk about moderate things like socialism and whatnot so that you would gain their trust. That's how they always work. That's how every Democrat here in America works. They gain your trust. Oh, I'm not really that bad. Oh, I'm a moderate. Sinema is a classic example right here in Arizona. I'm a moderate and whatnot. Then when the economic collapse happens, as it did in the recession of 2007 and has happened in other times, the people start to suffer. They look to a savior. That's what happened in Russia during the October Revolution. They look to a savior. Oh, my God, all of us are suffering. All of this famine. We're tired of fighting your wars. You hear this with the Iraq war. We're tired of our people being sent over to die in wars that we don't know about. This happened in World War One with Bolshevism, where the Germans are not really a threat. The Germans are nice people. We shouldn't be fighting them. The troops then defected. And when that happened, when people suffered, when they had rags on their backs, when the food wasn't on the table, that's when they strike. And that's when the revolution happens. Because then the people are willing to live with a lot of things that they wouldn't be. Well, obviously, capitalism doesn't work because why? Well, because we're in these wars, because we're in this debt, we have rags on our back, and food is no longer being on the table. It's socialism which creates the conditions for a people to accept communism. That's how it's done. That's how it's happening here. That's why so many people on the right, so many conservatives, are fearful of socialism. It's not the what we see in Venezuela or whatnot. They're trying to drive Venezuela into a communist state. The Venezuelan leaders, both Hugo Chavez, his successor, and also the political opposition, are all controlled by leftists. That's what you may not understand. It doesn't matter what the people vote for. It doesn't matter what the people want. They're going to lose because eventually they will be driven into a communist state. And this is why it's taking so long in Venezuela. The Venezuelan people are not prepared for that. They will be. If they go hungry long enough, if food's not on the table, if they're on rags, if they get into a situation where there's a war or people are dying or mass disease, famine, whatnot, then the people will be ready for communism in Venezuela. That's what's happening there. The people, the leaders, the different elections that are going on in Venezuela are all backed by Castro supporters, okay? What I call Castroites. They're communists. And that's why when you have these elections, they don't even know what's coming. And they're going to develop a communist state in Venezuela. That's what it's all about. It's not about socialism. It's about destroying people's will against communism so that they're ready for it. And I think the people of Venezuela, if they have a strong savior come along and say, no, 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 it's all these socialists that are the problem. What you really need, it's all these capitalists that are the problem. What you really need is for the state to control everything. We'll fix it all. We'll give you food. We'll give you housing. We'll give you medical care. All the things that capitalism obviously has failed. That's what's coming in Venezuela. That's why many people here in the United States are opposing the different leaders in the Venezuela election, because they see it coming. They know what's coming. Castro-backed leadership. Communistic support. A communist state in Venezuela. That's the thing to be feared of. It's not about Chavez. It's not about socialism. It's about communism. They're at that point where they've now, the society has collapsing. Just as it happened in the Bolshevik Revolution in 1917, it'll happen in Venezuela too. You'll see a violent revolution. You'll see a savior who will say, I can fix it. I will do everything if you'll only accept my dictatorship. Because that's what communism is. Whether it's by a number of leaders, whether it's by a sole leader, it's a dictatorship. It's where the state controls everything. And that's what they plan for the United States. They don't even know it. That's the problem. That's the great comedy of it all. That's the great ridiculousness of all these people, Feinstein, Sinema, every Democrat that you know, doesn't realize that they are the ones who are being used. They're the people that fund them, people like Soros, people out of the country who are diverting huge amounts of capital into the Antifa movement, into other of these violent overthrow. What they're trying to do is destabilize the society. And when they do, what will happen is somebody that you haven't seen yet will emerge and say, I can solve your problems. Capitalism is the problem. Because the people have been told this for years. Our education system has been telling Americans for years, communism is a solution. Socialism is, it's just another economic model. Capitalism is the problem. And then when they get into power, you know, the first ones to get executed, the first ones to die, the people like Feinstein and whatnot, and Sinema and everything, because they'll realize they've been being used. They'll realize and they'll speak up. And because they have the trust of the American people, because the American people have been voting for Democrats for years, as they said, Hillary Clinton. They'll listen to them. That's why the communists will destroy them. And those will be the people that will be destroyed first. That's what's the sad part. They don't even realize they're being used. Oh, we'll give you this money. Oh, we've got to, you know, stop people like Trump. Oh, we've got to stop people who give individual liberties. The Constitution is a problem. Yeah, problem to them. The only people that are afraid of things like Bibles and guns are the people that are trying to take them away from you. People like socialists, people like the Democrat Party. They're not communists. There's a few people that are out and out communists and just hiding it from you. But by and large, the Democrat Party are not communists. They are people being used by communists, people outside the country. People who want to be dictators. And for them, communism is just a tool to achieve their means. And that's what they got planned for the United States. They want to destroy capitalism because capitalism gives you freedom. Capitalism means you own the business. Capitalism means you work for somebody who owns the business. And they can say and do whatever they want. When you own a business, when you build something, when you have that money coming in because your hard work, your investment, your risk of capital. In other words, you've taken your money and risked it, put it on the table and say, I'm going to build a business. You may have taken a loan against your home with an SBA loan, for instance. When you've taken that risk and done things, that gives you freedom. Because now you, if you have money, if your business is successful, you could say whatever you want. Look at people like Jeff Bezos of Amazon, Bill Gates. Look at these billionaires. Mark Zuckerberg, they can say and do whatever they want. If they want to make, you know, Twitter a liberal bastion, they can do that. That's their company. And of course, does anybody tell Bill Gates what to do? He has billions of dollars. He does whatever he wants. In the case of Donald Trump, you had an exceptional individual. He used those billions and he used that freedom to say, hey, listen, our government is going the wrong way. I'm going to change it personally. I'm going to run for president, and I'm going to take government out of your pocket. And that's why they're upset, and that's why they're mad at him. That's why they're not too mad when George Bush gets elected. That's why they're not too mad when a John McCain comes out and says things, because he's as liberal as they are. It's just big government that achieves its means in a slower manner. But that's why they get upset with Trump. That's why everyone's so hideously against him. Because he's dismantling the systems that they put in place to bring a dictatorial state to the United States. Let's take a break. And I'm going to talk to you about how the state ends up killing everyone in the end. We'll be right back. Now I'm where I want to be and who I want to be. We're back. How many people have been killed by communism over the years? And its related leverage tools I just explained, socialism. How many people? How many do you think? Let's talk first about attributable deaths. These are things like mass executions. Direct deaths where exterminations, what they call cleansing, ethnic cleansing, which is genocide, state-sponsored executions of people who just don't want to go along with the plan. In a communistic state and things like that, people like me would be executed. They often go after the people that helped bring it in. As I said, you remember, you know, Marxism and Leninism in Russia was brought into it by Marx, Lenin, Trotsky. There were some other figures. They were all executed. I mean, look it up in various ways, because now that they were a problem, because people like Stalin come along who are dictators. And they're associated people like Khrushchev and the future. They're dictators. So what they do is they get rid of the intelligent people who know better. People who wanted, who thought that a redistribution of wealth in various forms would be a success, would be a way to solve poverty. The problem is, of course, poverty is not created by lack of wealth. It's created by a poor decision-making process on the individual's part. But how many deaths directly? Well, let's talk about the Soviet Union. And this is documented. There have been a number of studies. University of Pittsburgh did one. The best one, I thought, was the Black Book of Communism, which is a study done by a bunch of French scholars. And it was done, I believe, in 1996, directly figuring out how many people from exterminations and whatnot. And it was I believe the author of the study was Stephen Cortez. I'd have to look it up. Cortez. French is it's a French version of Cortez. C-O-U-R-T-O-I-S, Quartaz. I don't know how to pronounce it. I'm not French. He directly attributed to mass executions. There were 20 million people killed in the Soviet Union alone. 20 million. I mean, if you think about that, imagine a New York phone book. Stack another one on top of it. Everyone in that phone book is dead. Everyone. This is people directly attributed to communism and Stalinist policies, from Trotsky and Lenin on forward to when the eventual change in the Soviet Union happened, and now we have Putin, which is still going on. I mean, you know, we all know that he's killing journalists and people that he's jailing, imprisoning, and in labor camps. So the Soviet Union by itself and its associated future government of Russia, 20 million people, pop, gone. 20 million. It's like the city of New York and the city of Miami and the city of Dallas completely exterminated. One fell swoop. Boom. How many people that would 20 million have died? How many children would they have had? How many future Russians that would that have been? Gone. In a heartbeat. Historically, in a heartbeat. When you look at historical means from, let's say, 1917 to 1999 or 1999. You talk about the fall of the Soviet Union. Some say the Berlin Wall, maybe earlier, 1991 or whatever. But that's a lot of people in a very short period of time, 60, 70 years. Let's talk about China. China's a Soviet, you know, creation. It's communist. Mao it was probably one of the most brutal mass murderers in world history. You know how many people were directly killed in the China regime, a communist regime? 65 million people. Pooh, gone. I mean, that number is staggering when you think about it. Think about the six largest cities in America. Take all those people, then multiply it by two. Gone. The population of the United States is only, what, 300 million? 65 million are gone overnight. Pop. That's just a staggering number. Then there's the associated smaller offenses. Vietnam, a million deaths. This is after the United States left. A million people. North Korea, still going on. Labor camps, exterminations, blowing generals up who disagree with the leader. 2 million. Cambodia, Pol Pot and some of those people, genocide, stacks of skulls. We've seen the pictures, 2 million there. 2 million. There's only 3 million people in Phoenix, man. 2 million in Cambodia. Pop, gone. Less than 50 years. Eastern Europe, ethnic cleansing, Serbia, Croatia, a million. This is from their book, their study. Latin America, 150,000. Communism is a new thing there, only within the last 40 years or so. Africa, though, Africa is spreading like wildfire. 1.7 million exterminated. And this is not from the things that there are other ways that you can die from communism and socialism. Everything from the government basically driving you into poverty and you starving to death, or maybe bad medical care, medical malpractice. For instance, you get a bad medical care and you die of a bad heart transplant or something. That's directly attributed to socialism, but it's not in a study like this. 1.7 million in Africa. Afghanistan had communism, you know, for a short time. Russia, you know how many people got killed there? 1.5 million. Poof. More than in Vietnam. Afghanistan, 1.5 million. The international communist movement, communist parties in power, just, you know, individual little things like Cuba, which isn't included in Latin America's numbers. These are people that were just killed by the wayside as communism rose to power, about 10,000 people. The total among all the nations, according to this book, according to the Black Book of Communism, 100 million people. That's a number so large, I can't, it's a third of the United States. A third. Gone. Poof. Do they ever talk about that in the Harvard Economic School? Do they ever say, hey, socialism is another economic system, but be aware, it's going to kill 100 million people. Does anybody ever say that in the classroom? I don't know. I've never attended Harvard University. They won't let a guy like me in. Do they ever discuss that? Hey, listen, capitalism doesn't work. You know, a lot of people are suffering because, you know, they can't have the big home. They can't really succeed in a meritocracy system, which capitalism is. So we have this other system where we take some of the wealth of the wealthy people and give it to the less than wealthy people. Oh, great. That sounds good to me. Only downside is it's going to kill a third of you. That's a staggering number. Or let's say if you're a big country like China, whatever, it's going to kill 10% of your population. Would you sign up for that program? Would you sign up for an economic system that potentially can wipe out a third of your population? Well, the United States is going to vote in a month or so, and it's going to decide that again, once again. And people are lining up for it. People are lining up to be slaughtered. And we're not even talking about the soft socialism, like Nazism. 20 million killed from Nazism. We're not even talking about that. We're not even talking about the Yugoslavians or whatnot, which are millions or so. If you include them, the total goes up to over 130 million. Do they ever discuss that? I mean, what is communism? What is leftism? And as I explained, how the path that we're going down, it's either ruled by them, where they decide everything. They hand out all the food. They hand all the things. Or ruin, basically. You're dead. And those that succeed in that system, you know who they are? The guys at the top. It's a further redistribution. You want to talk about wealth inequality. Bernie Sanders, a typical idiot, right? This guy is a socialist from the word go. That's why he's an independent, by the way. He's not part of the Democratic Party. Just a point of note. Even the Democratic Party doesn't want to talk to Bernie Sanders, right? That's why he was used to run against Hillary Clinton. Did they ever talk about all these debts? Did they ever mention, yeah, but there's a risk here? Well, what's the risk? Well, about 10 or 20% of your population might die. Not counting all the subtleties, which we're going to talk about next. No, they never do. They never do. That's why Bernie Sanders is excluded. Well, we don't really want to talk about Bernie Sanders because people start to wake up. When people like Bernie Sanders come around, right? Then people start to say things like I am right now. Hey, listen, we're headed down this path. They never mention it because it's to them, it's not real. Bernie Sanders always talks about wealth inequality, right? Oh, the rich people, too much money at the are rich. Too many people like Bill Gates, too much money up there, not enough at the lower end. It's getting bad. Well, why do you think it is? Where is wealth inequality at its most extreme? Mao's China, Stalin's Russia, Pol Pot's Cambodia, That's where wealth inequality is. And that's why America is getting worse, because they're shifting more to socialism. That's why wealth inequality, because people are exploiting the system. Who's the best paid people in California? Guys at the top. City councilman. There's a story about a city councilman basically raising money and then quitting just to, you know, pay his bills. I could tell you a story about a Tibetan client of mine, but I don't have time today. I've written an article about it, about what he experienced when he lived in Mao's China. The argument from the guys that would come around to collect his grain and his goats and his milk for the poor who were living in poorer lands. The explanation is, yeah, those poor people need it, but how will we eat? The people that do best in Stalin's Russia, Mao's China, are the military and the government officials, not the people. That's what they're not telling you. People at the top live pretty well. And that's what happens here with socialism. Guys who run things run it well. They get paid well. They drive around in limousines. You don't. Because the system is set up to empower them. And we've talked about that many times. The actor that gets the Oscar shortly after he comes out against Trump. The musician that gets the awards after they make a statement about Trump. Someone who was not political for years. These are the people that benefit the most because the system pays you off. Do this for us. We'll give you this. We'll make some deals. Oh, you're one of the team. They don't even have to say it on the side. They don't even have to sit in a smoke-filled room and say, we'll give you this. No. People recognize, well, I'll just do this. And guess what? That person's a good guy. That person's a good woman. We'll give them something. We'll take care of them. The promise is made to Stormy Daniels. The promise is made to, don't worry. We'll take care of it. And in the end, a third of your population dies. Because a lot of people just don't go along with it. And frankly, a lot of people are a problem for a socialistic or communistic system. Because if you have a lot of people and you have a lot of wealth inequality where more money is going up top and less is going to the bottom, they don't want that revolution to happen. Those people become a problem for the state. They become a statistical problem. And so they're just left by the wayside to die. They don't care because it solves a problem for them. Let's talk about that subtle peasantry that goes on in Europe and America today. We'll be right back. Gifts of all sizes help to ensure that Liberty Never Sleeps remains a relevant, vital resource across our nation. More than 70% of the funding for Liberty Never Sleeps comes from our listeners through the generosity of membership support by donating at Patreon.com. Join our Insiders Club for $10 a month and gain access to private shows and editorial columns. Go to LibertyNeverSleeps.com and click on the Donate Now button at the top of the page or on the button at our Facebook site. Thank you for your continued support.
Oh, baby, tell it to me once again.
You know, a few years ago, I wrote a book, Return of the Kings. It's my first action of political dysentery. Dysentery? What is dysentery? Is that a word, dysentery, being an American dissident? I talked about a global climate change agenda. I did this before Obama even talked about it. I mentioned it in the book, this election. It was about the time of the election. I said to the American people, it's people around me and in this book, that it's a return to the old days of kings and peasants. That's why the book is called Return of the Kings. Because that's what it is. It doesn't matter if they're an elected leader, like in Stalin. Stalin was elected, believe it or not. Doesn't matter if they're a Mao. It doesn't matter what the title of the job is. It's a king. That's all you are. A dictator is a king. King is a dictator. Same thing. King of North Korea. Kim Jong, fat kid. King of Russia. Putin. Putin is no different than a czar. None. Lives the same way, does the same things. Kings had to answer to a parliament or a board or a politburo or whatever terms you want. It's the same thing. It's no different than Longshanks in England. And as a result, when you have a system like that, and I'm only going to spend a few minutes on this, you have a peasantry. The bulk of your population is reduced to peasantry. What do I mean? Go to Europe. Ask how and see how the average person in Europe lives. Oh, they have food. They have housing. They have medical care. They have all the things that we're asking for here in the United States. Let's live more like Europe. We don't have guns in Europe. No problem. We have transit. You don't need a car, so you can't own one. Because why? Everything's so expensive. It's expensive to get a big house in Europe. How many people live in big homes like here in America? Here in America, we have huge tracts. I live in one. Big homes, 2,000-3,000 square feet. More money if you have a good income, like a dual income family, you live in a better house, 400,000-500,000. 3,000-4,000 square feet. Lots of fun toys in them here in America. Europe, not so much. You live in cubicles, essentially. Small, little apartments is the way most people live in Europe. And they live in a museum. They look around, they walk down the street. Oh, look at the quaint architecture from the 1600s and the 1500s. Look at how beautiful it is. Look at how nice it is. Everybody getting along. Yeah, that's true. That's what you get with socialism. But how do you live? There's no future for you in Europe. You are what you are. If you earn $50,000 a year and you live in a cubicle and you have a modest lifestyle, you will have a modest lifestyle the rest of your life. That's it, folks. There's no future, no hope. And as a result, many socialist countries have a high suicide rate because people one day wake up and recognize that. As they get older, as they live in their 50s as they did in their 20s, they suddenly realize that they're not going to get any better. Oh, they'll be taken care of because they're efficient little bees in the beehive. They produce a little bit of honey, each person producing a little bit of honey, and the guy at the top redistributes the honey to everybody, like a beehive. Dictatorship. You're a peasant. Oh, it's a nicer peasantry than it was in Longshanks' time in old England in the 1500s. You don't live in a grass hut. You don't work in manual labor. You work in a nice little firm in a nice little cubicle, and you pin up little pictures of your family, and you have a little potted plant, and you live like a fucking peasant. And people think it's a good life. I have a good salary. But all of my salary goes to my mortgage and my credit cards. You're living like a peasant. You have no freedoms. You can't walk away from your life. You can't go pick up and live in another state or do anything. You know why? They own you. Well, this is my job. I have to go to it. I have time off only when my boss says I do. You're a peasant. You're a slave. And maybe more, you owe student loan money. You can't move. You can't take another job. You can't go anywhere else. Why? Well, because there's no job opportunities either. That's living in a socialistic state. You're a peasant. Guy at the top lives really good. And one day, they drive you into economic ruin, and suddenly you're all for communism because now you don't even have your potted plant and your little pictures of your family and your little pin-up little funny stickers in your cubicle and your little sad little chair and your sad little gray thing and your sad little life. And so you want that back. Now suddenly it's a big thing. The rent becomes so high that you're driven out of your home. You can't even afford to live in a city. You can't even afford to put food on the table. All of a sudden, you start blaming capitalism. And that's how you become a peasant in communist society. And then the people start to die in a communist society. And people get executed. And you sit there. And now that you have your cubicle back, now that the communists gave it back to you, you don't say anything because you don't want to be one of the people who gets killed. That's what they're trying to bring to America. It's peasantry. It's a king, folks. And the nobles, those are the town councils and the mayors who have basically gone with the party line. Or the famous people like the gladiators of Rome are the celebrities of today. They're the same people. They're willing to sell their bodies, do whatever they have to do, because that's what you do when you're an actor. And you sign up for it. And in return, if you're successful, if you're good at it, you get a lot of money. And you got a little wealth and you got a lot of fame. And so you don't want to hear about the peasants suffering. You don't want to hear anymore about that. And when people start to die, you go, well, good riddance. They were problems anyway. They were always bitching and moaning. If you don't think that that'll happen to conservatives here in the United States, if these guys get in serious power, where they control all three houses of government, if you don't think that will happen here, you're out of your mind. If you don't think they'll try and lock up people like me as mentally ill, who have oppositional defiant disorder, you've heard of this? You're out of your mind. People like Kristen Sinema will one day sign my death warrant if they get in power. No doubt about it. I have no doubt about it. None. Assuming they survive the purge that would be coming under communist rule. That's what is worrisome to me. It's not the average Democrat, right? I'm not worried too much about the Democrat in Congress because that's existed for many, many years. We've had Democrats since the 1860s, right? Or 1840s or whatever it was when the Democrat Party, that's it. That's just ordinary run-of-the-mill liberals. Kennedy was a classic ordinary run-of-the-mill liberal. He didn't believe in big taxes. He was for reducing taxes and whatnot because he wanted business to succeed because his dad was Joe Kennedy. And so we recognize the value of capitalism, right? But at the same time, he wanted socially liberal. He believed in civil rights and he wanted certain things to make men more equal. And many people in America still believe that. Kennedy, to many people, was a great savior, but he was a liberal. He wasn't no communist, though. As a matter of fact, he was a firm anti-commie. He was against gangs and violence in cities, Bobby Kennedy. And he was, you know, fiscally conservative, socially liberal. But today, Kennedy would not survive in today's Democrat Party. Because why? Because it's gradually become infiltrated with our poor education system and the subtle peasantry that's going on. Why do people live the way they do? Why do people accept that? Well, because what's the alternative? You got a student loan debt. You got credit card debt. You got heavy mortgage debt because prices in blue states are homes are much more expensive than prices in red states. Same with the cities. What's the average home in blue California? 500,000, 600,000, maybe a million. Cities like Palo Alto, it's 2 million plus. What's the price of a 3,000 square foot McMansion here in Arizona? 300 grand, maybe, if you live in the outlying areas. Cities are worse. It costs more, but it's certainly better than California. Why? Well, because we have a red state. Low regulations, low taxes, low subsidies. Socialism drives the cost of living through the roof so that you live smaller and smaller and smaller lives. Small little cubicle, small little job, small little home. Our apartment, small little cars, because, you know, you pollute if you use too big a car. Small little people living small little lives with no hope. That's living as a peasant. You don't have to have a pitchfork and shovel manure like you did under King Longshanks to be a peasant. You can be a peasant living in your little cubicle and being happy with it, being satisfied with it. Oh, we can afford to go to vacation once a year to Newport or to Ocean Beach, California, or maybe to the shores of Corpus Christi, and we can save up for that. It's bullshit. That's not the American lifestyle. Americans live big. We drive big, fancy cars, live in big homes, eat lots of bacon, and tell the rest of the world to go fuck itself. That's America, and that's why we're hated. And that's what capitalism brings. Oh, yeah, we have cycles. We have times of good times and we have times of bad. That's one of the downsides of capitalism. Nothing good doesn't have a downside. But, man, we live better than anyone else in the world. And it's why we have to build walls to keep people out. Because everyone wants to be a part of this system. Why does a third of the world work in the United States? A third of our workers are from other countries, people who either immigrated here as citizens or are working here with permits, visas, green. Why do you think that is? Why do you think everyone wants to come here for medical care? Why do you think everyone wants to come here for education? You know how many foreign students we have in colleges? It's astonishing. There's a reason here. We do it better than anyone else in the world. Everyone wants to be a part of it. Everyone wants to sell their goods in America. Everyone wants our markets to be open. Their markets, they close because they know what happens. The reality is everyone wants to be in America or be like an American. Big cars, cowboy hats, big old arm around the big busted blonde sitting in the seat. That's America. That's the way it should be. And that's what capitalism has brought us in less than 300 years. Europe is still living like peasants, and it took them 3,000 years to reach where they are. That's the difference between capitalism, socialism, and communism. And that's why socialism sucks. It will always suck. And if you think living in Section 8 housing with a phone, with food stamps, with all this stuff provided by government is a good life, you're out of your mind. It's better off to have none of those things and work in a field. Because you'll have your freedom at least. You'll have the ability to be something more than you are. We're running out of time. I got to talk about this a little bit in the Democratic Party because we're almost out of time. We'll be right back. Okay, one last word. This is something I feel strongly about. Leftism is socialism. Democrat Party represents socialism, even if they don't admit it. Oh, they do to each other in private conversations. Project Veritas says it all the time. Oh, you have to lie to get our jobs. We can't tell American people what we really are about because they'll never accept it. Look at the candidates of Beto O'Rourke. Look at the candidate. I remember when Barbara Boxer was running for re-election. You go on her website, you'd think she was a conservative. We're pro-business. We're pro-people. And when it came out that Hillary Clinton wasn't that, when she stood in front of a bunch of coal miners, the blue-collar worker, which traditionally made up a lot of Democrat votes, and told them, well, you're all going to be out of work. You have to sell solar panels. We're going to destroy the coal industry. When they suddenly realized and got hit in the face with that wet tuna, that socialism smacks at your head, they voted her out. If she hadn't have been that way, if she had run on a traditional liberal ticket, as bad a candidate as she was, she might have won. It was only a few states that were the swing states. If she'd have won Pennsylvania, if she'd have won the Ohio River Valley or maybe the upper Midwest, which she basically abandoned, never campaigned there, she'd have won. That's what worries me. She's going to run again. She might not make the same mistakes twice. People might start believing that Donald Trump is just a jerk because he tweeted out somebody was a horse face. Leftism is socialism. If you're going to vote for it, make no mistake. You are taking us down a path which will eventually involve economic ruin, destruction, death, and eventual communist dictatorship here in America. That's what's coming. They're talking about it now. They're talking about packing the Supreme Court. Why do you think that is? Well, we'll do this plan. They never talk about amending the Constitution. They talk about this plan. They always have a plan, five-year plan. You know, this the friggin' communists in Russia, Stalin was always on this five-year plan. So it's 5 years. We're going to have to die a lot, but in 5 years, we'll be better. And then at the end of 5 years, we extended 5 years. Even Obama came out with a five-year plan. I was horrified, horrified when that came out. Five-year plan. It's always five-year plan. Leftism is socialism. And if you vote for it this fall, if you vote for it, it's just in a few weeks. If you vote for a Democrat, you might as well put a knife to your throat or to your kids' throats because that's what will end up happening. You'll have socialism, you'll have peasantry, and then eventually the entire system will collapse as it has in Venezuela. And what will come is a communist dictator savior comes along. Says, I'll fix it. I'll be the strong fist that this country needs. When you look at it, when you study it, I don't have time to really go into it today, but when you study the economic collapse in Germany, it wasn't about Jewish bankers so much. It wasn't about war reparations. That was just a tool. That was communist infiltration into Germany. they were trying to happen in Germany what happened in Russia. Adolf Hitler came along and jumped ship and got him to go down the path to Nazism. But it was the communists that were causing a lot of trouble in Germany. It's one of the reasons why Hitler hated the communists. Don't have time to go into that. We're out of time. Get an election in November. You can decide which way that you want this country to go. You want to live in a little cubicle with a little plant, a little funny picture of your family and your kids' spirograph up there? Be my guest. Not me. I want more than that for my progeny and myself. That's why I always have owned businesses in the last 20 years. I want that freedom. I want the ability that someday I'll be better than what I am today. And I, make no mistake, if I'm not successful, I can live with that. If my businesses fail, so be it. I've had businesses that have failed, not because of anything that I did. It just was, you know, circumstances. It's the way it happens. It's very risky to start a business. But man, the reward payoff, if you're successful, it's worth it. I'm willing to take that risk. I'm not willing to live in a cubicle and a little chair and a little thing provided to me by someone else and owed to everybody else. No, I won't do it. I won't live like that. I'll go hungry before I do that. I'm willing to take that risk. And if you don't want to, and maybe you want to work in a capitalist society, okay, that's fine. You could be one of my employees. I'll pay you well. But make no mistake, you vote for Democrats in the fall, and I don't care what state you're in, what if they got a D in front of their name, even if they don't admit it, even if they don't even know it, you will bring a system which will eventually result in a communist dictator here in America. No doubt in my mind. That's why I've been a conservative my whole life. Small government works, less government. That's why I vote Republican. It's not about, you know, abortion rights or anything that or whatnot. It's about disempowering government. Big government sucks from Republicans and Democrats alike. I don't want to live like a peasant. Do you? Make your decision this fall. We're out of time. Take care. We'll be back tomorrow. And tomorrow we're going to talk about illegal immigration. Have a good one.
It's that time of year again. Time to start your engines and hit the gas because Minitober is on at Mini of Manhattan. We're offering unbelievable deals on your favorite minis all month long. Get behind the wheel of the Mini you've been dreaming of and test drive it like you stole it. It's time to buckle up for Minitober now through October 31st. Visit us online at mininyc.com for special offers. Mini of Manhattan. Adventure starts here.